The Musician's Musician Podcast is brought to you by you. For real. We rely on listener donations to grow the show, so if you'd like to support what we do, you can set up a one-time or recurring donation. Just follow the link in the description. It's super easy, because PayPal. A huge thanks to those of you who have already given. We also want to ask if you could be so kind as to rate and subscribe to the program on whatever platform you use to listen to us. It helps the show reach more ears, and we love your feedback. Okay, on to the show. So, Max, as we were getting ready for this thing, it got me thinking about music festivals, because our subject today is no stranger to being a very active present at many music festivals.
And the big ones, too.
Big music festivals. One time I was playing a music festival, not a big one, but a music festival nevertheless, out in Louisville, Kentucky, and there was an event that I went to with the band. One of the bands that was billed for the festival was playing at this event. And I'd like you to try and imagine this. And I'm not even going to explain how they sounded. I'm just going to tell you the aesthetic. And I want to see what this makes you think of.
Okay. got my imaginary thinking cap on.
All right. So, three white dudes in their 20s. All right.
Okay.
All three of them in, like, toy store quality Native American garb.
Okay.
Okay. There's a percussionist whose two instruments are a floor tom and a suspended cymbal.
Okay.
There's an acoustic guitar player.
Hold on. Was he using mallets or a...
Mallets.
Okay. Did I call
only
that
only mallets. An acoustic guitar player, and a vocalist with a tambourine.
I can hear that already. I can hear it from the past, all the way from Louisville, all the way here to Austin. Loud and clear.
Yes.
Man, I feel like this genre is a genre that finds me. You know, I don't feel like I can get away from it. Not that that's a bad thing. But not all acts in this genre are created equal. And, you know, I can only imagine what your Louisville friends sounded like.
Oh, boy.
But, wow. There is always such a spectrum in every genre. But, man, is it apparent when you get to, like, indie rock and indie pop.
Yeah.
It's wild to me.
Well, and in that spirit, who are we talking about?
We're talking about Florence and the Machine.
Woo!
Oh, yeah.
They're definitely the very top of this genre, I would say. I think there are some others that maybe come to mind first, but I don't think that that makes them better, and I don't think that that makes them more important. And that's actually one of the big reasons why we want to talk about Florence today. When we look at who they've toured with, when we look at who they've influenced, when we look at who else is in the genre and is bigger than them, quote unquote bigger, Florence is still more important.
Yeah, we felt justified in covering Florence. I mean, she's probably the most commercially successful artist that we've covered thus far. And there are a lot of very, very successful bands that we could talk about who have also been very influential. There are also a lot of very successful bands that have been of little to no influence at all. At least we would argue. So we wanted to talk about Florence, though, because especially on the last decade of music, let's say the 20-teens, she has been, or they have been, that's going to be tricky through this.
That's really going to be hard.
It's hard because her name is in the,
right.
But
yeah, it's not even because it's like a band versus her thing. It's just because her name is literally in the band's
name.
Yeah,
that's inexcusable. We can do better. Anyway,
we're sorry, Florence, and the rest of you.
So, but she is. They have been tremendously influential on a lot of local musicians and the local music scene, but also a lot of artists who really rose to prominence in the 20-teens. So we're hoping to outline what characteristics of their music have been influential, why it's been influential, and perhaps why some people really tend to gravitate to that sound.
So when we're talking about this sound, we're talking about this kind of indie rock, indie pop sort of sound. And I have strong feelings on the use of the word indie.
Same.
And yeah. And that's, I don't know that I'll ever get off of that soapbox, but you know, there's definitely a sound associated with it that doesn't have anything to do about whether you're part of a label or not, or major label or an independent label, or you have no label or whatever. Yeah. It has nothing to do with that. In many cases, people are, you know, you look at like Florence and the Machine, like other, there's a lot of indie quote unquote bands that are on huge labels and doing like really big things, but there's definitely a sound associated with it. And we'll talk about that a lot in the instrumentation section. And when we talk about their sound, because really, really what Florence and the Machine bring to the table is this really maturity of this kind of folky sound in a way. It has roots in folk. It has roots in a variety of other places, particularly with Florence and the Machine, because they have such a wide variety of instruments and textures and vibes going on. But it does fall into this place of indie rock, indie pop. And people have a whole boatload of different, I guess, kind of names that they will use to describe this genre.
And we do want to talk more about, we want to spend more time kind of talking about the music side of things. We do want to spend a bit more time talking about the music, the sounds that you're hearing, kind of what traditions those are coming out of, and all of that business. So briefly, Max, can you tell us a little bit about the conception of Florence and the Machine and kind of their early goings and where they ended up?
Yeah, you bet. So Florence and the Machine really started out as a duo, in a sense. And I say that just because, like, Florence Welch, and her friend Isabella, quote-unquote, Machine Summers, were writing and performing music together. And that's really where this started. They were living in the UK. They started writing and performing together. They were on their way to the first gig, and they're like, oh man, what do we call this band? Which is really funny, because I'm glad that other genres have that too.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's not a rock thing. It's not a metal thing. I like to think country is exempt from that. At least someone doesn't have to worry about it, but that's probably not true either. But anyway, they decided, because Florence was going by Florence Robot and Isabella has the moniker Machine, that they called it that. And Florence allegedly is not stoked on it. She kind of wishes it wasn't that way, but that's the way it is. But anyway, they recorded with a band and they put out their first album called Lungs in 2009. It was largely in the UK. It was also in the United States, and they got picked up by a label and put out their first album called Lungs. And Lungs was actually very successful. I mean, particularly for a first album, you're getting out of the United Kingdom, you're getting into the United States as well as other places. So for a first record getting just international from the get-go, that's very, very successful. They continue. They put out the album Ceremonials in 2011. And this is, in my opinion, where Florence and the Machine really takes off. This is like really where they have this unique sound that is characteristic of them, and people start to really take huge notice. Not to say that there weren't like great singles and a lot of great reception for Lungs, but Ceremonials was definitely the follow-up that you could not you know, you couldn't ignore. I would venture to say that's their most well-known album. So then later they put out an album, How Big, How Blue, How Beautiful. And then in 2018, High as Hope. And there have been a smattering of singles and other little releases here and there. They've done some very large tours. For Ceremonials, they did 2 years on the road. Lungs was 3.5 years. Just a lot of touring. But I want to note really quick who they're touring with. When we're looking at the Lungs tour, it's a lot of bands that I haven't necessarily heard of or spent a lot of time listening to. But then you go to the Ceremonials tour, and their opening acts are out of this world.
Right.
Like, some that you would expect, and then others, like The Weeknd. Like, The Weeknd was opening for Florence and the Machine. Uh-huh. But then also bands like Haim and Snow Patrol. Snow Patrol was co-headlining, but it's really interesting to me that very quickly they were working with bands that were very, very different in sound from them. But they're still a band. They have tour dates for this year, 2021, and seem to have no plans of stopping anytime soon.
And just to note as well, I do want to emphasize how quickly kind of they made it. Admittedly, I'm not entirely sure what their connection was to the industry off the bat, but they had like a record deal and were a big thing, like really fast, which maybe everyone just loved them. But I mean, my understanding too is that the BBC was airing their stuff a lot as well, which apparently helped propel them forward in their early days.
Not?
Yeah, right. That's just something to think about. It's always incredible to me to see these bands that, like, after being a band for a year, they're like international superstars. Like, it just kind of blows my mind.
Isn't that what we hoped for in high school?
Oh, of course. Yeah.
I'm glad someone's living that dream.
Just to note as well, so Florence admittedly is very influenced by some of the other iconic female powerhouses like Stevie Nicks or Grace Slick or Kate Bush, you know, and there's many, many more. But I would contend too, though, that the band as a whole is very influenced by kind of this precursor to indie music with bands like The Smiths, or Sonic Youth, and even a lot of like early, I don't know, I guess like alternative bands or maybe even like some grunge bands.
Absolutely.
Like especially in regards to like the range that the drums are playing in and different tonal aspects that are being used and occasionally like even kind of the attitudes that are getting pulled from there. So there's, if you listen to Florence and the Machine, it doesn't sound like, doesn't really sound like pop music. It doesn't really sound like rock, which is oftentimes something that gets put into the category of like alternative music, but oftentimes, and especially currently, indie music. But when you talk to, you know, Florence herself, she talks about how they're kind of the archetypal rock band in terms of what they're trying to communicate as a band. They're just dealing with very familiar archetypes. They're talking about like love and hate and like having a good time or like heartbreak or, you know, just things that you would kind of that are very easy to connect to. And not that they were doing that to just like try and make it so easy to just make you buy one of their albums, but like just in the sense that they're very much following a tradition of these bands that are singing about very relatable themes.
Yeah, and they're doing it in a way, though, that is really creative. I mean, the imagery that's employed in the lyrics, the literary devices that they're using, there's a lot of craftsmanship going into how they're delivering these things, both in a musical and in a lyrical sense. So, and actually, I will note, also in a visual sense, their shows are very much a spectacle.
Before we get into talking about kind of more of the creative process and the music, I think this is probably the highest production value that we have encountered so far in this podcast.
I don't know, man. Gorgoroth?
Interesting point. But Max, you've talked a lot on this podcast at different points about different parts of the EQ spectrum that are utilized and different production techniques that are utilized within these different domains. And we haven't really delved into this domain very much. So having said that, do you want to kind of just very, very briefly touch on what differentiates the production process for a band like Florence and the Machine?
I think there are a lot of different ways you can go about it. And I don't particularly know about Florence and the Machine's creative process in and of itself, but a lot of bands like this really center everything around the songwriting. So a lot of times you have one person in the band or several people, but really, I mean, kind of one at a time. You'll have someone that will write a song, for example, on an acoustic guitar or a piano, and they will bring that to the band. And from there, they flesh it out into this arrangement that is going to work for the band. And that's something that I think is really, I mean, I think that's one way to note a great band, just kind of my thoughts. Like if you can isolate the entire arrangement down to like an acoustic guitar or a piano and it still sounds good, I think that's not every time, but I think that's oftentimes a way to recognize good songwriting. But with Florence and the Machine, you have so many different instruments going on and they all kind of fit in different places in the sonic spectrum. And you're using different types of instruments. There are a number of electronic instruments and samplers and sorts of things like that that you will hear if you listen closely, whether they're actual samples or not, or if they're like actually recording the whistle that I kept hearing through one of the songs. But but as you go through, you'll hear that with a band like Florence, many times you have a set instrumentation and like, okay, this guy's going to play the guitar. This guy's going to play the drums. This person's playing percussion. This person's going to play the piano. But Florence and the Machine has so many different things going on all the time. And every song, even on just one record, has a variety of instruments that are used that will not be used in every song. They're very, very specifically, at least in my perception of it, choosing their instrumentation to suit the arrangement and the song, which I think is really cool and one of the things that sets Florence and the Machine apart. And with all these instruments, really what you get is a huge focus on the arrangement. So like when you're recording this, you really have to be cognizant of really what's being played all the time. Because if you have a tambourine that's going on throughout, you really might not want that tambourine the whole time. Because very quickly, with a lot of people, and up in the last record, you've got 9 people in the band. At that point, it's very easy to have a lot of things going on at once. And you really get a muddy sound. So knowing when to pull things out and when to make things sparse and to have this very organic flow of this arrangement of who's playing what and when are they playing it. Having that be very deliberate makes a huge difference. And that's, I think, one of the things that Florence and the Machine does particularly well, because we'll go in the same song from something extremely sparse and light to this huge orchestral production. And I think they have such a cool way of delivering this emotion that they're really going for, because they're not tied to an instrument. They're really setting forth to create a song and purvey an emotion. And when you're producing that, you have to be very careful to make sure that you don't lose sight of that, because very quickly the song becomes muddy or boring or predictable.
And I think to your point earlier, like a lot of songs from Florence and the Machine could just be played like on a guitar and a vocalist and it would be great, right? Like it would still be a really great song. But you bring in these very experienced producers and writers to kind of help round out the instrumentation and the orchestration, and maybe just a couple of very small, just some very minor adjustments to be made in the arrangement of the song to make it really, really spark.
Yeah. Well, and I want to add on to that. Florence and the Machine really did have like kind of a bootstrappy phase. Like they were recording in a number of different studios, but some of their songs were really, really, really low budget.
Sure.
I mean, yeah. When you look at The Dog Days Are Over, there aren't instruments on that.
Right.
That was recorded in, Florence says it was in the studio the size of a loo.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, it reminds me of, there's a Yes record where John Anderson, the singer, for the drums for a section of the song, like they went out into like this tunnel and he like didn't like tap dance, but kind of, right. You know, to get the sounds for it. I think that creativity is really fun. And you hear that on some of the records more than others, in my opinion.
So just a couple of other sonic things to be listening for. Something that's very characteristic of this genre is that if there is electric guitar happening, if you think back to the Sigur Rós episode, where the guitar is a very effectual piece of the sound, not that this is always the case in Florence and the Machine. Sometimes the guitar is doing very guitar things.
Super guitar things.
Yeah.
Like crunchy chords, whole nine yards.
Totally. Which is kind of what brings us back to the like earlier like Sonic Youth, Smiths, and like grunge influence kind of going on in there, right? But oftentimes too, what you'll find in this genre, and you will hear this as well, is that the guitars will have a very, very processed sound, in that they're using a lot of effects. I mean, I'm honestly not 100% sure with Florence and the Machine in particular, but if you look at the pedal boards that some of the guitar players in these bands are using, it's really kind of ridiculous. Like the amount of, like, from the guitar string to what's coming out of the PA, there's like a billion things happening in between there, or potentially a billion things.
It can be a nightmare.
Yeah.
I've seen some of those boards, man.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Like those take up more real estate than like all of the amplifiers combined.
Totally. And I have like PTSD from having pedal boards go out all the time. So I'm like really nervous about using too many pedals anymore when I perform. But
man, I still don't understand why that happened to you.
I don't know.
I never had that problem.
I had it all the time.
I know. I know. We talked about it constantly.
I probably did something wrong.
Whatever.
Anyway, but I do want to spend just a very small amount of time talking about the rhythmic driving force that happens in this group. So the drums are really important to the sound and to the propulsion that happens in these songs. And often, the drummer is not afraid to go hard with the toms. We're very used to hearing a song being driven by like cymbal kick and snare and some sort of arrangement, which of course happens, but it's not infrequent to have some sort of simple but memorable rhythmic motif happening on the toms, but then with like a predictable snare hit happening within all of that. So that's just to say that the drums are being used oftentimes more as like a percussion set rather than as just simply a backbeat, sort of a role as the drums oftentimes will play.
Definitely. They definitely inform a lot of the motion, and this music does have a different motion and feel than a lot of others. And I think that's in large part because of that. Some other things that you'll hear when you're particularly listening to Florence and the Machine is you're going to hear a huge focus on vocals. And not just Florence's vocal, because it's a very powerful vocal. However, you're going to hear tons of harmonies. You're going to hear octaves up. You're going to hear octaves down. You're going to hear other like descants going on. There's all sorts of different things vocally that are happening in the background that really will add this texture and character to it. And that, along with all of the different instruments that are being employed, because you're going to go from one song on the record that's like a driving rock guitar to like having like a glockenspiel, to like having it just be just
employ the glockenspiel
down
at your peril. It usually sounds bad. but if it's used tastefully, it's a great effect.
Absolutely. Yeah. they're not afraid to use anything. And I think there's seldom a time when they do something that's not really tasteful and do a really good job. And I feel like I'm saying that they do a really good job of it. It's just because, like, I've heard so many of these bands, and, like, so many of them, like, just they don't measure up, you know? And that's the same with any genre. All genres are exactly this way. But Florence and the Machine really just knocks it out of the park with their arrangement and how they are delivering on these simple things, but doing it in a very tasteful and sometimes very complex way. You're going to hear very strange and cool rhythms if you, like, isolate something out. It's there's always something deeper to listen for. There's another layer to peel back and see really what's going on with it. So as you listen to Florence and the Machine, which you probably have before, I would put some money on that. I think you would really be served if you are going to actually, like, put some headphones on or some good speakers and, like, really sit back and listen, try and pull apart the different parts. Like, what's that thing in the low end happening? What's this, like, thing that's, like, high frequency? Is that a cymbal? Is that a tambourine? Is that some sort of shaker? Because it changes all the time, and it's really fun to be able to identify each of these different things that are going on, because they give each song a unique flavor and character.
And if I may, very briefly too, there are so many bands within this world that are just the worst music that you'll ever hear in the world. And the thing that works with Florence and the Machine is that all of these different little aspects, right? The glockenspiel, the use of the harp oftentimes, and different other auxiliary sounds. There's a lot of bands that have been very influenced by groups like Florence and the Machine who rely heavily on the use of these more effectual types of sounds, and thinking that that's all there is to it, right? Like, that's how you make this sound. And that's just not all there is to it. And again, which is why we want to talk about Florence, because they're doing this thing, but they're doing it at the highest level that you can be doing it.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I think that really gets to me when I listen to Florence and the Machine is, and we'd be remiss if we, like, didn't hit this, but they're using non-standard song structures. They're using non-standard chord progressions. They're really pushing things and being creative musically in ways that most bands and artists just frankly aren't, regardless of genre. They're pushing the song structure and the actual flow of the song in such a way that it really becomes an emotional part of the song, rather than just having these four chords that repeat and then you change to a different four chords for the bridge. Really what they're doing is they are crafting this whole experience throughout. And one of the ways that comes is through having non-standard chord progressions. And if you, particularly Ceremonials, if you listen to that album and you try and, like, map out where the chords are, I think you'll be really impressed. It's very much not what you'd expect from what you've mostly heard from this genre, or any genre, really.
Yeah. So people that you can kind of, I had two other artists come to mind when I was thinking about people that are similar to Florence and the Machine. You may or may not agree with my with my takes here, but the two artists I thought of, one was Lana Del Rey. I feel like their vocal quality and the way that they're employing their voice and their range is very similar, as well as Bjork, which Bjork. Mm. They're again, Bjork and Florence are a bit different, but I feel like they're satisfying a very similar niche, even though they sound different. I don't know if that makes any sense, but those are kind of the two kind of contemporaries of her. I guess Bjork's a little, they're both a little bit older, I think, but I don't know. Did you have any?
Well, actually, Florence and the Machine, Florence has been influenced by Bjork, so
well,
that wouldn't be that weird.
Okay, I feel less weird.
Yeah, I mean, I think I have a hard time thinking about who they're similar to, because to me, they are one of the bands that really pioneered this in a way, not being tied to a particular sound, because there are some things that sound like Florence and the Machine just has such a varied sound that I think it's difficult to find someone that sounds like them. However, when you're looking at artists that stylistically have that same sort of concept going on, then I think that's where the real similarities lie. And I think, to me, that goes back to like English progressive rock bands.
Yeah.
I mean, like, yes, I mentioned earlier, like, Steve Howe, the guitarist, will have, like, he'll be playing one guitar, have one on an upright stand that he can go up to and play, and then, like, two more on his back. Because right. They're, like, they need those things in that song to, you know, take you on that journey. So I think it's very progressive in a sense. And I think if it's done right, then it very much is. So
how would you recommend getting into Florence and the Machine, Max?
Well, I would recommend checking out albums. There are four albums. They're not long. I mean, some of them are longer than others, but there are a bunch of singles too. And that's been the most recent work that Florence and the Machine has put out. Florence has worked on a number of guest spots with other artists and writing, I think along with the band too, writing for certain things. They have a song on the, gosh, what is that called? It's the new Cruella de Vil movie that's probably not new because I just like.
I think it's just called Cruella.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
I'm not sure. When did that come out? I haven't seen it. I think it's, maybe it's still in theaters. I don't know.
Oh, okay. I was worried that it came out like 3 years ago.
No.
So they have a song for that. They're definitely a band that you would want to see live. They're going to be live very soon as per their tour schedule. So they're known for having a huge spectacle and live show and being very captivating. So definitely check them out that way. That's something that you can't get from just listening. But I particularly like older Florence and the Machine. There was kind of a dip in the middle that I'm not into. A particular album that I don't care for as much, but I think the most recent album is very good, and I think there's a lot going on there that's really cool. But I would say my favorite is Ceremonials.
Okay.
And I have to plug this because I will be really, really sad if I don't. But Sumerian Records is, and I think this is actually my introduction to Florence and the Machine. Sumerian Records, the label, put together an album of mostly Ceremonials, but some other songs too. And every song on the record was done by a different band on the label. And they did a really cool job. It's super metal.
Right.
It's do not expect to hear anything like Florence on there.
Yeah.
But band Periphery that I truly love did a cover of Only for a Night. And that just blew my mind. I loved that. Loved that arrangement. And then was really stoked to get into Florence and the Machine way back when that all was released.
Nice.
So, Parker, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of have a similar posture as you. I mean, my pick was also Ceremonials. I have to admit, this is typically a space that I don't find myself wandering in. There's a lot, as I've mentioned ad nauseum throughout this episode, there are a lot of bands within this world that are just horrible. But every now and again, I do encounter like an indie or an alternative band that like is doing the thing well. And Florence is one of those. And I feel like Ceremonials kind of captures what they do well best. That is not to say that you ought not to listen to the other things that Florence and the Machine has done. I mean, it's worth mentioning again at this point, they are a very successful band. So it's not like they really need us giving our stamp of approval on anything, because people are going to love whatever they put out.
And have for a long time.
Yes. But anyway, so having said all of that, we do still want to give our humble defense of a band of such a large status. So here is our defense of Florence and the Machine. Regardless of the musical situation, audiences are moved by a powerful voice. Many of the great popular acts are fronted by cognizant vocalists who are experts at calibrating their restraint in such a way that a listener is not only along for the ride, but has been taken hostage by the emotive gravity of the singer. Florence Welch is certainly one of these vocalists, and though she is in the limelight, Florence and the Machine is an ensemble. Each member of the band has played a crucial role in the overall sound that has permeated many forms of media, and perhaps more importantly, in inspiring the yearning pipe dreams of young indie artists all over the world.
The British have a long-standing tradition of strong frontmen and women, peddling their rhapsodic ramblings to wistful audiences in desperate need of reprieve from the mundane. Like their predecessors, much of Florence and the Machine's memorable aspects tend to be lyrical and melodic. The foundation carrying these lyrical melodies, though, are the driving force of a steady drum beat that doesn't shy away from lower tuned drums, contributing to the almost tribal pounding that cohorts unashamedly band around. Stack atop the beat an ethereal harmonic backdrop of processed electric guitar, keyboards, and harp, and all we lack yet is Florence's mid-range chamber.
Because their music has been so available, accessible, and effective, young bands understandably want to recreate this vibe. This has ushered in a deluge of floor tom hitters and reverb lovers into local music scenes everywhere. People want to be part of the sound that stands ready to be called into your favorite TV drama, blockbuster movie, or car commercial. The omnipresence of Florence and the Machine speaks to many phenomena. Good marketing, great branding, competent label executives, experienced writers and producers, but most importantly, a talented band of players who know their sound and how to most effectively deliver it to wanting ears.
So thanks for listening. Florence and the Machine is a band that you've definitely heard of, but they're a band that you may not know why they're so important. There are a lot of reasons that they've been successful, but some of those really have been these kind of background concepts that we particularly want to cover on this podcast. We want to help you understand why these influential artists have been influential. And Florence and the Machine, I think, is a really, really good example of that. We generally don't talk about artists that are this commercially successful, but being in this space generally just kind of comes with that. So you really are going to be commercially successful when you're playing a genre that's not black metal. But when you look at what's going on in Florence and the Machine's music, it's really something interesting, creative, and special. But as always, we want to hear from you. Shoot us a DM at TMMPod on Instagram. Shoot us an email at themusiciansmusicianpodcast@gmail.com. We are on Facebook at TMMPod. Also, you can search The Musicians Musician Podcast. And we have a website, www.tmmpod.com. We hope you enjoyed this. Leave a rating or a comment, whatever your podcast platform allows. We hope that you will share this with a friend. If there's something that you found interesting or valuable, we hope that that's something that will influence you to want to share and, you know, help other people find these things that you thought were interesting and valuable. And until next time, thanks.